Unlock more to life with Adrian Pinozzo, Real Estate Investing Podcast, where we broadcast interviews with successful real estate investors across North America to empower you on your journey to unlocking more to life with real estate investing. Now here's your host, Adrian Pinozzo.
Hey everyone, it's Adrian Pinozzo with the More to Life Real Estate Investing Podcast, helping you get more to life and starting your journey in your real estate investing dreams. And what's up, everybody? Time really, really flies quick. Can you believe it? We're already on our fourth live episode here with the More to Life Real Estate Investing Podcast. Our guest today, Mr. Justin Wu, is here to share his real estate journey with us. But above and beyond that, we're going to really deep dive into the commercial financing, commercial acquisition of apartment buildings, as opposed to the typical residential deals. And Justin is our resident expert in this field, and we're really, really excited to bring him on. So without further delay, I actually met Justin, if you remember, Justin, 5 years ago now. I was featured on a podcast. It was my business partner, Sandy McKay's Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast, that Justin and I actually met 5 short years ago. So without further delay, everyone, I want to welcome Justin Wu. Justin, how you doing?
Doing well, Adrian. Thanks very much for having me. It's been a very busy summer. Things are good.
Yeah, we've been pretty busy for sure. So like I mentioned, for all the listeners out there, Justin and I connected 5 years ago after listening to a recent podcast that I was on back then. And Justin made the decision to reach out to me. And 5 years later, fast forward, we now own projects together, buildings together, and have really, really grown our connection with what we're doing in the real estate world. So without further delay, Justin, I know a little bit about your previous career, but why don't we get right into it? Tell us a little bit about what you were doing before you became a real estate investor.
Sure. I was a finance guy for about 22 years on Bay Street, working with several large financial institutions. It was a very rewarding career. So I was a financial or research analyst. So if you ever watch CNBC or those financial shows like BNN, and you see these analysts on TV that talk about stocks and whether they should buy or sell, or people should buy or sell, that's essentially what I did. So I had an opportunity to work with a lot of big pension funds, hedge funds, managers, and help them with their investment picks for their portfolios. I also had the opportunity to work with a lot of large billion-dollar corporations, multinational corporations, had direct lines to the CEOs and CFOs of those companies, got to travel all over the world as part of the job. So it was a great career, and I learned a ton. And there are very, very few chairs at the table in that business, so I felt extremely kind of blessed and quite lucky, actually, to have had such a long career there.
Yeah, so kind of around the same time as my career, because I was a police officer, like you know, for 21 years. So you're kind of in that space, give or take, for about the same time. So pretty cool, pretty cool. Tell me about the mindset. What and why the transition from that career to real estate investing?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the Bay Street career is a very rigorous and very tough career. The hours are very, very long. When I first started on Bay Street, you know, you're typically putting 12 to 15 hours a day, 5, sometimes 6 days a week. So you're easily putting in 60 to 70 hours a week. And I had friends on the investment banking side, which is not where I was, and that was in a different department, but those guys were putting 80 to 100 hours a week. So it's a real grind. But naturally, as you progress through your career, the hours do get a little bit better because a lot of your juniors are handling some of the workload. So, but I, you know, even towards the end of my career on Bay Street, I was still putting in 10, 12 hours a day. The money was very good, and I got to work with some very highly driven, highly motivated, incredibly smart people. So you're always on your toes, but you're always learning. So it was very rewarding. But, you know, at some point, a lot of people, including myself, just start to think that there may be something more. that you need to change in your life? And is there a life outside or a career outside of Bay Street for you? So it was around 2012, 2013 that I started feeling a lot less satisfied with my Bay Street career. The industry had been going through a lot of changes. My firm had been going through a lot of changes. And in 2016, I was lucky enough to receive a package. So, you know, some people may think that getting let go is a bad thing, but getting paid, in my opinion, getting paid to leave a career that you're not really happy with is actually a huge win. So it actually gave me the opportunity to try something new. And, you know, I did contemplate for a very minute second to going back to Bay Street, but that changed very, very quickly because I just didn't want to go through that grind again. Right. So, you know, I mean, in terms of my transition, you know, after I left Bay Street, my wife was saying, you know, she was already a realtor at the time in Toronto, and she suggested that I write my exams, become a realtor, which I did. So I joined her, and we have a husband and wife practice in Toronto. And it kind of went from there, and I started doing a lot more research on real estate investing and such.
Awesome. Yeah. I obviously, we all have a story, and when you and I connected, obviously we hit it off and now we're in business together and whatnot. But needless to say, I guess the experience and your life on Bay Street helped you where you are today. There's probably a lot of things you could take from there. And now you're implementing, obviously, when you're analyzing deals and numbers and stuff and real estate investing. Do you find that it's kind of helped you a little bit with respect to numbers and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, my role at my firms on Bay Street were basically crunching numbers. So I'm very, very comfortable with spreadsheets, and understanding financial concepts is part of my background. Right. So when you start getting into real estate, particularly on the commercial side, it wasn't really a big transition for me because it was something I was quite familiar with already.
Yeah. Well, I've obviously, being the numbers guy that works with EPC, we've obviously come to value your experience and expertise in that field. And obviously we rely on you when we're picking up these buildings and making sure the numbers are tight and they're accurate, because we all know what the end of the rainbow on how fruitful that could be. So why don't we segue a little bit into, let's talk a little bit about creating partnerships. And I think it's super important, obviously, in the world that we're in now with real estate investing and getting into business together. Can we touch upon, or can you comment upon what was your thought process when you first reached out and you were contemplating on partnering with another real estate investor and getting involved in the business like that? Mm-hmm. What would your advice be, or what were your thoughts surrounding that 5 years ago when you started to invest and meet me?
Yeah, so shortly after I left Bay Street, you know, my wife had been talking to me about real estate investing for quite a number of years, even before that. And I kind of even watched her parents, who own several condos in Toronto, and they basically had been retired for 15 years and were living off the income of these condos. So it was basically from my wife and my wife's family that kind of spurred me to start to take a look, a deeper dive into real estate. And at the same time, I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And it's, you know, it's a pretty easy read, but it has a very powerful message. It talked about the virtues of passive versus active income streams, and that there will be a time in your life where either you can't or you don't want to trade your time for money anymore, and that you'll need to depend on these passive income streams. So the next question for me was, you know, what kind of passive income streams should I be looking at in terms of investments? And real estate was just kind of a natural option for me. And up until then, you know, 100% of my portfolio was in financial assets like stocks and hedge funds and mutual funds and things like that, and had gone through some very, very volatile periods within the stock market. And I just realized I needed to kind of diversify my portfolio and add some real estate. So I started to do some research, which is what I did for a career. I researched different types of real estate investments, from multifamily to even self-storage and trailer parks. I looked at different markets like Toronto, Hamilton, Waterloo, Windsor. And I started listening to a lot of podcasts. And that's when, as you mentioned, I came across the podcast where you were a guest on Sandy's podcast. And I thought, it was a very intriguing and very powerful business model. So the whole buy, repair, rent, refi model just made so much sense to me. So it's very efficient use of capital. So we got in contact and we partnered up on some deals, and I guess the rest is history, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's been a good run for sure since we've gone into business together. Touching upon that just quickly, why would someone, and maybe you can comment on it, obviously it's more of an opinionated answer, why would someone choose to invest in equities versus real estate? Or vice versa, mm-hmm. Why would someone choose to invest in real estate over equities and securities and whatnot?
Well, I think they both have their pros and cons. I think a lot will depend on one's individual situation, your comfort level, the amount of financial resources you have, and how liquid you need your portfolio to be. For equities, one of the big pros is that you can really diversify across a lot of industries. You can own tech companies, you can own banks, you can own energy companies, you can even own real estate companies and REITs, for example. They're also easier to buy and sell, so you have a lot more liquidity. So if you need cash right away, it's relatively simple to sell your stocks and access that cash quickly. The downside with stocks, as I mentioned earlier, is that they're highly volatile. So if you're one of those people that looks at your portfolio on a day-to-day basis, that volatility can be a source of anxiety for some people. Also, in some respects, you have less control with stocks. I mean, you can have control on which stocks you own, but once you own them, you really have no say on how those companies are managed or run. Now, in terms of real estate, the negatives, obviously, it's not liquid. So you can't just say, I want to sell my property and get your cash the next day. It takes time. There's also higher, what I call friction costs. So to do a transaction in real estate requires more upfront costs. So you have realtor fees you got to pay. You've got land transfer taxes, appraisals, inspections, and so forth. So it's a higher initial cost. And of course, some people just don't want to get into the whole management of a real estate portfolio with the property management and dealing with tenants, but you can always hire property managers for that. So on the positive side, though, you have much more control with real estate. So you can determine how you want to position a property in the market. You can decide what kind of tenant profile you want for your building. You can decide whether you want to try to force appreciation of that property through renovations and getting higher rents and so forth. So you can really treat it like a business. Real estate is also more capital efficient in my mind because of the use of leverage and using other people's money. So you can you can buy real estate with relatively little down on a percentage basis. On an absolute basis, obviously, it can be a lot of money, but on a percentage of the purchase, you can be putting 5, 10, 15, 20% down on a purchase of real estate. So that can really enhance your returns over the long run. And the other advantage for real estate is that it's not market to market like stocks are. So, if you recall back in March 2020 during the coronavirus outbreak, when it first kind of came out, the stock market dropped 30% in 2 days, which was shocking for a lot of people. And that just doesn't happen with real estate. So you have that, at least a sense of a little bit more security and stability with owning real estate. And cash flow, passive income characteristics of particularly multifamily real estate investments, in my mind, is superior to a lot of other investments, mainly because it's very, very stable over an economic cycle. People always need a place to live, and tenants aren't constantly turning over. So you can always expect that there's going to be some stability to the income and the cash flows you're getting from these types of properties. And I guess the last thing I would say is that for real estate, it acts a bit as an inflation hedge because you're able to increase your rents once a year with the rate of inflation. That helps it be a bit of a hedge to inflation. But overall, you know, I think that I would suggest owning both equities, or equities and real estate should be a cornerstone of any portfolio.
Yeah, some great advice there, Justin. I always say to, you know, we get a lot of calls from people that are interested in joint venturing, you know, with our company and whatnot, and getting into business together. Mm-hmm. And they always say, you know, what are the risks? We present our analysis on a property or an acquisition, or just our business model in general. And as you know, we perform in the very high space of the buy, renovate, refinance, and rent. So they ask me a lot of times, what are the risks of getting involved in real estate? And yes, the market could fluctuate, obviously. Real estate goes up, it goes down, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, I always kind of come back to the main principle. And in my opinion, versus, and I'm shedding this light more so in comparison to the equity side of things that you touched upon. But my point is this. I always come back to the point of one thing. We're buying bricks and mortar at the end of the day. And even though the market may fluctuate, where it may go up and may go down slightly, so on and so forth, at the end of the day, you still have that asset. You still have that tangible bricks and mortar, and it will always be there, as opposed to maybe some of the equities you may invest in. If things go, you know, south really fast, it's going to really, I guess, have a negative impact on that investment as opposed to the real estate side. And again, my mindset is, and we've talked about this a number of times, time in the market in real estate will yield incredible returns if you're patient and you just invest in real estate for long term, as opposed to a quick flip to make, you know, 30, 40, 50 grand. How do you feel about that?
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think for a lot of investments, you know, time is always something that you should always have. You know, you should always look longer term. But I think this is especially true with real estate. And, you know, you brought on a good point. I mean, I think the fact that real estate is a tangible asset that you can touch and feel is something that's very valuable as part of your portfolio. And certainly that's the reason why banks are willing to lend 80% to 90% of exactly. of the value of a loan of a property in terms of mortgage, because they have that feeling of security with this particular asset, the asset class. So I totally agree with you on those points for sure. Yeah,
because the bank, like you touched upon, the bank will give me 80% loan to value, let's say on an acquisition. So they'll give me 80% of the cost to buy that property. Now, if I walked into the bank, and you will know more about this than I do, Justin, if I walked into the bank and I said, hey, I want to buy this stock and I need $100,000. Will the bank give me an 80% loan so I can go buy a stock?
No, they won't. No.
Right.
I mean, so the most you can usually get, I think, is 40 or 50% margin for certain types of investors. Yeah.
Right. So that in itself speaks volumes how comfortable the banks are with investing in real estate and them giving you 80% of their money so you can go buy real estate, as opposed to the banks giving you X amount of money if you want to go buy a stock. I think right there, that speaks kind of volumes on how the banks feel the security. Mm-hmm. The security is with real estate. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think you have to understand banks are extremely conservative, like super, super conservative. And the fact that they're willing to give 80% of the purchase price, I think, suggests a lot in terms of, again, how they feel about real estate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome advice there, Justin. I really want to get into now where, you know, your expertise lie and, you know, why you're part of the team, sort of speak, with respect to buying and analyzing commercial deals as opposed to residential. Now, when I say commercial, I'm really referring to, you know, the purpose-built apartment buildings, whether they're 8 units, 10, 12, 20 unit buildings. And we all know the residential platform is 4 units and under. So our company as of late has really been getting into that commercial apartment building space. And obviously your expertise are twofold when it comes to analyzing these commercial deals. So let's dive into this. Why do you think, or what are some of the reasons why commercial acquisitions are more attractive to investors than residential?
I mean, I think to get to that, I think you need to kind of understand the differences between residential and commercial. I think the biggest difference in my mind is on the financing part. As you mentioned, with residential properties, they're usually under 6 doors, and commercial properties are over 6 doors or over. And there's also, you know, numerous differences between residential and commercial, but the qualification process for the mortgage is probably one of the key ones for, so for a residential mortgage, for example, it's pretty straightforward. As you know, it's your typical mortgage that you get for your home. And the primary lens that the bank uses there is your employment income, your T4. They, of course, can add income based on your other properties or investments, but the primary lens that they look at is you, the individual. For commercial mortgages, the primary lens that the banks will look at is the property itself. So what is the income generating potential of this property? So, and that's where the concept of NOI, or net operating income, starts to come into play, and that's a very important factor. NOI is essentially the income the property generates before mortgage payments, and it's what the bankers use to assess the property. You know, some, you know, other couple metrics that the banks typically use are things like cap rates and debt coverage ratio. So those are all very, very important metrics to understand when dealing with commercial. Commercial tends to be a little bit more complex. You need to be pretty good with your numbers and budgeting and forecasting and doing pro forma numbers. There's also a higher initial cost to doing commercial versus residential, because you need to come up with these reports like the environmental site assessments. The banks will always ask you to get these. So environmental site assessments, you'll need an appraisal, you need building condition reports, things like that. So there's a bit of a setup cost to these. And, you know, the other advantage with commercial is that you can buy them within a corporation. So, you know, I think there's a huge advantage to buying buildings within a corporation, as opposed to on the residential side, it's very, very difficult to buy buildings or houses within a corp. So there's some tax advantages, potentially there's the liability issues and things like that. So there's a bunch of advantages to going towards the commercial side. But for me, from a personal perspective, I wanted to kind of, the group, we wanted to kind of get into the commercial side because of this qualification process with the lenders. Residential mortgages, as I mentioned, are based on your income. And for me, this is from a personal perspective. When I first left Bay Street, I had no steady income or T4 because I was no longer employed. I was self-employed as a realtor, but I didn't have 2 years of track record of income. So it was very, very difficult for me to get a mortgage at the time because, you know, my income was just not, you know, there was no track record of that income. So I started looking at commercial because that's less of an issue on the commercial side. Because again, the commercial mortgages are largely based on the merits of the building, not as me, the individual. Right. So it just made a lot of sense. And on top of that, most banks will limit you to the number of properties you can own on a residential platform. It could be 4, it could be 5. But for the commercial side, there really isn't that limitation. So you really can scale your portfolio over time on the commercial side, with because of just how these things are looked at from the bank's perspective.
And I was actually going to touch on that. I get a lot of calls, people, again, wanting to get into business together with our company and joint venture. And, you know, some of the basic questions like, you know, how many properties do you already own? And, you know, some investors come straight out and tell me, Adrian, I already own 4 or 5, you know, duplexes, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on my last one, my mortgage broker told me, you know, this will probably be the last one because, you know, your debt service now and your overall lending capability, we're at our max, you know, and they're not able to get any more residential mortgages on the A side and maybe sometimes not even on the B side with lending. So now they're looking, you know, the question that I get is, can I still invest in real estate even though I already have 4 or 5 residential mortgages? I still want to do something. What do I do next? And I always try to segue and lead them to the commercial platform because, as you said, it really, the lending goes to the building and really not the individual. Obviously, with aspirations to continue investing in real estate, this is an avenue that they can take and obviously continue to buy properties on a bigger scale. Yes, like you mentioned, right, Justin, you said, obviously, you know, depending what the building is producing as far as net income will dictate what the lender will loan to on the purchase. So you may not get your, you know, most likely you're not going to get your 80% loan to value when you buy this apartment building because it needs to be stabilized and you know, renovated and whatnot. So you may have to, obviously, you will require to put down more capital, right? And, you know, the purchase may be looking at something like maybe a 70% loan to value. And then ultimately, on the back end, once you've stabilized the building, you know, new rents, new tenants, new renovations, then yes, you're looking at, you know, potentially an 80% loan to value. But I think the really, really key thing here about all of that is even if you're tapped on, you know, your qualifications on the residential side, but you still want to invest in real estate, there's still an avenue to do that. Would you not agree?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think the sky's the limit with commercial in my mind. As a matter of finding the deals, which can be a little bit more tricky, but certainly what you said is absolutely true. I think that in terms of you mentioned the 70% loan to value, and it's generally true. I think you can be creative though with a lot of these financings. You could try to go with a private mortgage, which can give you 80%. You can also
on the buy.
And even if you're putting 70% down, you can always structure loan packages to have a construction component so that the lender can provide you, you know, up to 80% of the construction costs as well. So there are ways of structuring a deal so that you don't have to put in as much capital. But you're right. Generally, there is a bit more capital required involved with these larger deals. But in my mind, they're totally worth it because on the back end, on the refinance, you can get an 80% loan to value. You can even get 85% in some cases if you go CMHC. And with CMHC type loans, you get they're insured by CMHC, so the banks give you much more favorable interest rates, and they can go to 30, 35, even 40 year amortizations, which really, really enhance the cash flow characteristics of these types of commercial properties. So there's a lot of advantages on the back end refinances with these commercial properties.
Awesome advice. Question. So I'm a new investor, or maybe I'm not a new investor. Typical scenario I get all the time, Adrian, I already own 2 rental properties and, you know, I'd like to get into something bigger. So here's a somewhat of a novice investor in the commercial space, and he wants to start buying apartment buildings and he doesn't have any experience in that. What are some of the benefits you think of, you know, getting involved in this kind of an acquisition and this kind of a deal, buying distressed apartment building, renovating it, old tenants out, new tenants in, new rents? What are some of the benefits of partnering with an experienced investor or an experienced company like ourselves? Can you touch a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think when they look at investments, they just look at strictly the returns or ROIs, but they kind of neglect the risk side Because there's always risk and reward, right? So how much risk are you taking to get how much return? And you can't look at the returns in isolation. You really need to look at the risk as well. And with real estate, there's risks. I mean, things can go sideways on deals, like in terms of, particularly in terms of the renovation side and on the financing side. So having someone that has a team in place, that has the infrastructure in place to basically alleviate a lot of these risks is a huge plus. And that's the reason when I first started looking at real estate, I partnered up with you, was because, you know, I was a novice investor at the time. I didn't really know what I was doing. And to buy a distressed property, and I'm on my own to do the renovations and do the property management and everything else, was just a little bit too daunting for me. Yeah, I mean, I think now I'm probably more comfortable doing it, but yeah. It took a few properties to really start to understand how things work, and having that team in place to help you partner up with you, I think is it makes that journey easier. For sure. It's not impossible to do, but, you know, it's a lot easier to have somebody to help you.
And let's face it, you know, getting into that new space of whether it's commercial apartment buildings or you're just starting out in general, the goal is to obviously make a smart investment, make a smart decision, you know, along the way. And without having, you know, maybe some help in your corner and things start to go sideways, it could really, really, knock on wood, it's never happened to us, but, you know, not having that the right people in your corner can make that experience overwhelming, potentially unsuccessful, and obviously overwhelming, unsuccessful. At the end of the day, you know, it's fair to say it could really taint your opinion about real estate investing. And, you know, have a horror story, like, oh, I decided to buy this rental property and I really didn't know what I was doing. And I just jumped into it and I lost this and this happened and that happened. And, you know, God help the person that told me to buy real estate, because I had an incredible bad experience with that and lost a ton of money. And I think maybe, you know, it's fair to say, having professionals in your corner to even help you get over that first one or second one or your first, you know, apartment building could definitely help that experience come out to be a positive experience. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I mean, it's, I think for me, I wanted to kind of grow my portfolio on the real estate side, and I wanted to start it off properly. And being a realtor as well, I had heard stories where, you know, people had basically been selling their investment properties because they were just fed up with this or that. And I thought, well, why don't they just have somebody to help manage that portfolio for them? It would have been a more positive experience. I mean, it's one thing to buy condos, which are more turnkey, but the returns on condos are going to be less. Then, you know, on the flip side, buying a distressed, you know, triplex or a 12 unit building, is a lot of work, and there's a lot of things that need to be considered, and you have to mitigate a lot of the risks that are going to happen. So it having people that really understand what those risks are and how, you know, what the process is for mitigating that risk, I think is very, very important.
Yeah, for sure. I completely, like, we're 100% on the same page there. So you're a realtor, obviously, now, and a lot of your business, from my knowledge, is obviously done in the city of Toronto. But yet, as an investor, obviously, you're also a real estate investor. From what I know, predominantly, your investments are all in the city of Hamilton. So can you just quickly touch upon why Hamilton, when you sell and most of your business is in Toronto, what's the biggest difference between investing in Hamilton or buying, you know, a triplex in Toronto? What do you see as far as the numbers?
Other than the dollar amounts, like a triplex in Toronto would probably set you back, depending on if it's semi or detached, between $1.8 to $2.5 million, plus or minus.
And so would that acquisition still require work?
Yeah, I think on the 1.8 million side, yeah, you're definitely still putting in work. So you're buying a property that almost $2 million, and you still have to pump in cash in there to turn it around. So, it depends on the size, of course, but I mean, that's a general number. And you probably know better what's happening on the Hamilton side, but the dollar amounts are significantly less. So for me, the reason why I went to Hamilton was, one was that, like, just the price points in Hamilton were significantly more attractive to me. And two, you know, I like the city of Hamilton. I mean, it's gone through some very, very challenging years over the last like 50 years, but it's now at the point where you're starting to see a lot of change in the city. It's got a pretty good employment base, good set of employers with all the hospitals and healthcare. I mean, I think it's around close to 30% of the workforce in Hamilton is related to healthcare, which is a very stable, it doesn't fluctuate with the economic cycle. You also have a lot of tech companies, you have the university there. So there's a lot of good employment there, and it's only an hour away from Toronto. And you're starting to see more and more people migrate from Toronto, Mississauga, Oakville into Hamilton. So the whole gentrification process in Hamilton is continuing. And I see that as a long-term trend. And I see that as a big upside potential for the property values over the long run for the city.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, I bought my first rental property in Hamilton just about 10 years ago now. And the regentrification, like you mentioned, in the city it just exploded. It really did. It exploded over the last, 10 years when I first started investing there to what I see now. And, you know, all the trendy shops and trendy restaurants on John Street and all that stuff. And in the downtown core, the regentrification there as well. It's amazing. And like you said, maybe I can touch upon quickly price points in Hamilton now. We're buying distressed, we're buying distressed four unit buildings in Hamilton for about 700,000, a little less, a little bit more, but that's, again, that's on the residential side. Excuse me. So obviously a lot cheaper than Toronto, and your money goes a lot further. And, I get a lot of questions too, like-minded investors, can the numbers still work given, the influx in prices, even in the city of Hamilton? You know better than me, Justin, we can still make the numbers work. One of the last things I wanted to talk about, and we'll close the conversation with commercial to residential and apartment buildings. We completed, our team completed a 12-unit project in downtown Hamilton. So we bought a 12-unit apartment building, distressed, that you were involved in and in that acquisition with us. And we've recently completed the project with respect to turning and stabilizing the building, the new tenants, the new rents, and the refi. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that project and how the refi played out and ultimately the success of that project?
Yeah, so we bought that building, I think it was in April last year.
Yeah.
April 2020, I think is when we closed. Kind of downtown Hamilton, east a little bit. Great property, 12 unit, purpose built. Good combination of two bedrooms, one bedrooms. And it was just in a state of disrepair and had not the greatest tenant profile at the time. Yeah. So we had a lot of work to cut out for us when we first bought the building. And it was a lot of work. We had to basically offer tenants the incentives to leave and cash for keys. And we were very successful in getting 11 of the 12 tenants to accept incentives, which was what we wanted. We needed, because we need to turn over those units and get the higher rents. I mean, and I think I've explained it to you that the math behind how this works is that given that cap rates in Hamilton are around 4 to 5% right now. For each dollar of incremental NOI that you get from that property equals to 20 to 25 times in terms of value of your property, right? So let's say you get an increase of $10,000 per year in NOI. That's $200,000 and $250,000 increase in the value of your property. So for each tenant that you can get out and turn over with a new higher paying tenant because you've renovated the unit is immense value to your building. But it takes a lot of work, and it took a lot of effort from our team to get these tenants to accept incentives.
Let me stop you there for one sec. Let's break that down one more step for our listeners. So we have a tenant who's paying $800 a month, a legacy tenant, $800 a month for a two bedroom. Now that tenant leaves and we perform our renovations, and now we've raised that rent from 800 to let's say 1400. So there's an increase of $600 a month from that one unit. Mm-hmm. So do the math with us. A $600 one unit rent increase, what does that do to the value of the building?
So that's about $7,000 increase annually, 7,200, but let's say 7,000. And so you multiply that by 20, 25 times. And that's that $7,000 of higher rent equates to about $140,000 of value to your building.
Just like that.
And if you multiply that by 11 units, you're talking about significant amount of value appreciation just by getting the higher rents. Right. So, you won't be able to get the higher rents unless you renovate them, of course, but that's part of it, right?
So you take the increase, let's just say you've increased by $500 a month, times that by 12 for the year, times that by 20.
Yeah, and it really depends on the cap rates. So the cap rates are basically a measurement of yield, and all the lenders typically kind of determine cap rates, what's an appropriate cap rate, what's appropriate yield for this building. The prevailing cap rates on refinances or on mortgages is between kind of 4 and 5% typically for the type of buildings that we're buying. Right. So yeah, for 4 to 5% cap rates, you're looking at 20 to 25 times multiples on the NOI, on that income.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I think we're coming to the end here, Justin. A lot of great information. And I really, when I first started as well, I was only buying, even before our company was in existence and we started the joint venture, I was only buying the duplexes, the triplexes and whatnot. And, we've grown in our space and obviously now grown into these purpose-built acquisitions, i.e. Apartment buildings. And it's become very fruitful. Last thing you didn't touch upon, how successful were we in getting all of our money out on that 12-unit building?
Yeah, we were able to get all our capital out on that one. So within 12 months, right. Which
was
pretty good. I mean, it was a grind. We got there, but we got there and we got all our capital. So that was a huge win for us and for our investor.
Yes, that was a joint venture project for everybody listening. And at the end of the day, like Justin mentioned, we now, in partnership with our JV partner, we now own a 12-unit building and extracted all of capital with none of our money left in this deal, which is incredible, and we're still cash flowing. So I think that speaks to the level of expertise, Justin, with respect to the numbers that you put forward right at the beginning of the project, to how our team, unfolded this deal. And ultimately, we have another very happy joint venture partner at the end of the day. We're all super happy. So that was awesome. So coming to the end here, Justin, we have what we call our lightning round, sort of speak. And we have three questions that we ask every guest at the end of the interview. We're just teeter-tottering almost on 50 minutes here. So question number one, Justin, what is your why? Why do you do what you do in your everyday life with real estate investing? What is your why?
I think the simple thing is it's just my family. I mean, it's I do everything I everything I do is for my family and for my kids and my wife, and trying to make sure they have a secure future, because these days it's looking more and more insecure out there, particularly for younger people. It's very, everything's become much more expensive. So I just want to make sure I create something that's lasting and that they can, that can support them.
Amazing. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Justin, when you picture more to life for Justin and his family, what do you see?
More to life. Well, for me, it's, I guess, a matter of having choice to do what I want. It sounds very typical, but we all want financial security, and financial security for our families. And I want to be able to live life, you know, on my terms. And having financial security is a big key to that. And I mean, it's one of the reasons I've started to do real estate and started this real estate journey.
So more to life for Justin and his family is financial freedom. Live life on your terms, in a nutshell.
Yep, in a nutshell.
And you obviously believe in real estate investing can do that for you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yep.
One more here, last but not least. If you were to give a novice investor or even an experienced investor listening to this episode on our podcast, if you were to give them one piece of advice with real estate investing, what would that be?
Well, for me, it's because I'm a research guy and I've always liked to dig into things. It's do your research. You know, understand your investment, research it, research the geographical market, the type of real estate that interests you, get comfortable with making that decision, because it's a big one. And once you're comfortable, then get into it. Just do it. As cliche as it sounds, you know, sometimes you just need to take action. So I think doing the research will get you to that point. And that's what I did. And that's how I started getting involved. I really started to understand the markets. And then I just jumped into it.
Do your research and then take action.
Right.
Awesome. All right. Well, Justin, it's been a great show. And thanks for joining us today. Lots of great advice on that commercial space and analyzing numbers and how the banks look at commercial lending to residential lending, and obviously your previous career and life on Bay Street and whatnot. Amazing content here, Justin. Thanks so much for having us or being with us. People out there who want to connect with Justin, how can they go about connecting with Justin Wu?
You can connect through our website. We have a website that's www.jwu.com. That's the best way to reach me.
Awesome. Thanks again, Justin. Anybody that wants to get in touch with me and talk a little bit more about real estate investing and potential joint venture partnerships, visit our website, www.investwithepc.com, or shoot me an email at executiveproperties@rogers.com. That's it for today, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And hope you enjoyed and got some really good content here for you to put in your toolbox and move on to the next and the next and the next episode. Take care. Have a great week and talk to you soon. Cheers.